His voice is recognized for over 40 years in British Columbia and Alberta. Tom Bricker is my guest today. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
You started in the early 70s, I believe.
Yeah, so. It was 1969. I was looking around to get into radio. I knew what I wanted to do from the age of 13. I met a broadcaster who was doing an afternoon show at CJVI in Victoria, which is now a Rogers Zone station, AM 900. Bill was his first name. He'd run a radio school in Ontario. I was returning some records, old 33 RPM records that I'd been loaned on how to get into the business and what you need to do and voice work and the whole thing. And Bill Crone said, come on in. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. He said, yeah, come on in. Sit in with my show. So he told me he was thinking about taking on a student. And what he did was he finally took me on. It was 16 weeks, an hour a week. And he said, over the first 3 or 4 weeks, I'll tell you whether I think you have it or not. And he said, okay, let's go on. And from there, we progressed. Then I got a job at CKDA as an overnight operator for a couple of weeks, midnight to 6, just pushing carts and the old carts and that sort of thing. They were looking for an overnight guy to go live, or woman, on CJVI. And Bill said, look, I have this young, raw student. He's over there operating at the other station, the competitor. Doesn't know anything, but maybe you could take a chance on him. So they looked up and down the coast, couldn't find anybody. And then finally, I was hired, and it kind of went from there.
And what were you doing on the overnight show? As you said, pushing carts, rolling discs?
Yeah, at CKDA I was. I wasn't on the air at all. At CJVI, I was an announcer, and I was running a music show for 6 hours.
And what type of music were you playing then?
It was anything. There was one major sponsor, Quan Lee Market on Government Street, and I played that over and over and over again. I mean, I could play Frank Sinatra to the Beat, to Burt Kempfert. And then, of course, as you know, they finally got into the CRTC. You had to play 33% CanCon, Canadian content. And so then I had to sit there every 2 weeks of the year and program, and with an old typewriter, sit there and make sure that I played 33% Canadian. It didn't necessarily have to be Gordon Lightfoot or Anne Murray. It could be, say, Burt Kempfert, an orchestra, or somebody who'd written something, as you know. But there was so little to choose from back then. And then the Canadian music industry finally took off because of that. But I was basically doing that. And then they allowed me to do sports because they knew my interest in sports. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:05 after the news, which was taped, I was doing a live sportscast, which thrilled me. And then later I went into sports there. And the other thing, you know, which a lot of people who get into the industry in these days, and we're talking in 2010, is the fact that, you know, the old 45s and the old 33 RPM records, which you used to spin. I mean, you and I spun discs, basically, right? Today, they don't do that. It's all into a computer. It was great fun.
You were doing the overnight show. You got to do a sports cast. And how did it progress after that?
Well, it progressed that I went over to CKDA because John McKeachy left and went to CKNW. And John recommended me for the sports director's position that he held at CKDA. So I went back to CKDA. I did the sports director's job for a couple of years. Then I basically got an offer from Bob Wood to go to Toronto. He'd been listening. My mentor, who you know, J.J. Richards, had hired me at CKDA. I went to Vancouver in the interim to do some work for CKWX and CJOR. I was operating at CJOR, doing the big talk shows with the major broadcasters, Terry Moore, Burns, there was Jack Webster, of course. Then I didn't really like Vancouver, so in the mid-70s I came back to Victoria. JJ hired me, and I was a sports director at CKDA, and I worked there. And then I got an offer from Bob Wood at CFUN, or CHUM in Toronto, to go there. That didn't work out. They flew me to Toronto. There were three of us. They flew to Toronto for a couple of days, and they interviewed us. Nothing happened. So I came back to Victoria, and then I got a call from Bob Wood because he'd hired JJ to go to CFUN. And Bob said, okay, I want Bricker, how do I get him? And so I flew over to the airport, Vancouver International Airport, and signed what I thought was a huge deal in 1980. For me, anyway, it was a two-year contract, $25,000 a year. I thought that was huge money. I was the sports director at CFUN in Vancouver. I made a major move, and I thought I was scared to death, to be honest with you, right, going from Little Victoria to Vancouver. But I knew that if I wanted to progress, I had to get out of a small market, as you did, I'm sure, right, and get to a bigger market.
Yeah.
You meet more people, as you know, you do more things, and you get experience. And from there, I spent 7 years there. After that, I was released. There were a number of changes. Paul Ski came along, who turned out in later years to be the CEO of Rogers in 2010. We had the BC Lions for a while, and we were doing sports, we were doing news, and then all of a sudden it all changed. They gave up the Lions rights. Paul brought in Light Rock, Less Talk. Good move. Station made a lot of money. Anna Stukas, Tom Larshad, and myself were all released because they weren't doing sports. And so I was looking for a job, and a couple of guys that I worked with in Victoria, Vince Cowden, for one, who was the GM at 66 CFR in Calgary, I was phoning around, and I thought, oh, we'll give Vince a call. Shannon Cook was there as well, who had been an afternoon disc jockey at CKDA in the previous years that I'd worked with. And I gave him a call, and they said, oh, by the way, we're looking for a sports guy. And you're free. And I said, yes, I am. So they flew me out. I did an interview, got the job there, became sports director at 66 CFR. Spent 3 years there. Just as they were acquiring the Flames broadcast rights, I missed the West Coast, to be honest with you. So I came back to the West Coast. In hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have left. Maybe I should have. Before I got that job, though, I did what I considered to be the most important thing I did and the most compelling and the most fulfilling. Because anybody, as you know, can go to a hockey game and cover a hockey game. And nothing against news people, but anybody can go to a news conference and cover a political statement. I did the Rick Hansen tour. John Ashbridge, I'd been working part-time after losing my job at CFUN. And before I phoned Vince in Calgary and Shannon, I'd been looking around. I got this call right out of the blue from John Ashbridge at NW, who was running their network at the time, and said, I hear you're free. And little did I know, but John had kept his eyes on a lot of people throughout the years, where they were going, what they were doing in Vancouver. I got this call at home, and I was living in North Vancouver, and I just split up with my fiance, and I didn't know what I was going to do with the house, which I finally sold. And John said, well, I tell you what, he said, it's now Friday. He said, I'll give you a call Monday. We're working on a person who may want or may not want to do the Rick Hansen tour, which meant going 3 months on the road with Rick and the crew, interviewing them. I'll set you up with a van, $75 per day per diem. That's the hotel, food, gas, everything. Yes, lots of cheap hamburgers. And John called back Monday and said the lady they had at the legislature, who they later released, and they wanted to do this tour, didn't want to do it, didn't want to leave at all, and said no. So John phoned and said, okay, meet me tomorrow morning, you're going. And I said, great. I didn't know what I was getting into. But I did 3 months. I went all around the province. I interviewed I don't know how many people of all walks of life with regards to spinal cord injuries, doctors, physiotherapists, Rick, the crew. Their backgrounds were amazing to put this together. As you know, they went right around the world. And that came to an end, and then I got a job in Calgary, and I stayed there. That was early 90s. I came back here because I missed the West Coast, and I sort of didn't do very much. I didn't find what I wanted to do. I was in Vancouver for a little bit, not really working in radio. I came back to Victoria. I was working part-time. Then I decided, well, I'd like to do more sports. So I phoned Brian Hall in Edmonton, who I knew from covering sports. As you know, major name in sports in the country. I ended up working for Brian. That station went dark when I got there. It was about 6 months later, and it went dark. And Brian's advice was, I know you're on a contract, but he said, get the heck out, because he said, it's going to go dark. I'm staying in Edmonton. This is my place. These are my roots. And so I did. Went back to 66 CFR in Calgary because they had an opening, and stayed there for a little bit. And then I came back to the West Coast again after being released from there. It was the second time that it had happened. So they gave me a nice buyout, as Paul Ski had given me at CFUN in the late 80s. And I came back here, went to Victoria, and ended up working at AM 900 in sales. Then I got into news in the newsroom in the afternoon. And then I was looking to get back full-time, and I phoned Victoria for a business report from Russ Byth, because they were sending us their business reports and saving money doing that, obviously. Russ said, well, listen, Tom Mark, the news director, you know him, and he's looking for people. And I said, really? And yeah, full-time people. So I said, not bad. So I phoned Tommy. He said, yeah, send me a resume. I want written stuff. I ended up coming back over here, being the morning writer to start with, and then going on the air in the all-news 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week job, and that's where I've been since. And right now, well, a job is evolved, right? Like I was doing basically Saturday, Sunday days, Monday, Wednesday evenings, and then Thursday, Friday off. Now I've been lucky enough over the last number of years to have a consistent Monday to Friday evening shift. Because you know, Mike, the old saying, listeners like consistency.
Well, at News 1130, did you come in before they went to All News or after the All News
change? After. Okay. I came in August of 1999. And I've been working there since. I didn't start when they were first in their beginning, which I think was, what, 93, 94,
93,
somewhere in there?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, I came in when they basically were. But they were then in the infancy stages to where they are now. Mm-hmm. There's been so many changes, and my goodness.
Well, I remember Tom Mark telling me when they were building that station and starting out, they were on carts and paper.
Oh.
And you had a stack of carts to take into the control room and scripts and dropping things and losing
things.
There'd
be a ton of paper, an inch thick, because you'd have to print out your scripts. And then there'd be like 18 carts that you'd have to take in. And of course, invariably,
they'd get out of order, you'd drop them.
Or you'd drop them, and you'd be 30 seconds from the air rushing in, and you'd go, great. And people would be scurrying around to help you, and you'd get on the air going, ugh.
Now, were you doing 20-minute segments or 30-minute segments back?
30-minute segments.
Because originally they started out, I know, in Toronto with the 20-minute segments.
No, so I came in when they were doing 30. Well, 30, basically, the top five, because I've done top hour to the bottom hour for the most part. Although I've done the bottom hour to the top hour, too. But basically, if you come in on the top hour, you're with a co-host for 5 minutes. Yes. Then you do the next 25. And then at the bottom of the hour, you go 5 minutes with the person who's doing bottom to the top. So that's when I came in.
Some other memories about your sports time. You must have some favorite highlights that you can think of over the years.
Oh, man.
People you've met, interviewed.
Lots of people I've met, lots of people I've interviewed. Boy, oh boy. One of the interesting things is in doing the PA. I've done the public address system for Major Junior Hockey in Victoria before Ed Chenoweth took over and stopped all the fighting. So Major Junior Hockey back then in the early 70s was filled with... You could get literally 300-400 minutes in a game. I mean, you'd wake up sometimes and you'd look at the box scores. Well, that's baseball talk, but the scores from the prairies, and see that Regina and Medicine Hat had like 350 minutes in penalties the night before. So many game misconduct. Now, when you get into announcing that, and you can feel a crowd waiting because they want to know, and you're writing all this down, number 10, okay, who is that? And you got to look at the program and or remember the names, and your game misconduct, major, and you go through all of that. So that was an experience. Doing it, though, overall, and I've done it for the Canucks for a few games when John Ashbridge was away, and also I've done it for the Calgary Flames. You're really under the gun as far as pressure goes because you never hear a PA guy make a mistake or a woman. Right?
Right.
They're always perfect. And so when you make an announcement, it better be perfect. That's the pressure of that job, because people don't want to hear, correction, that's number 20, not number 21. one of the interesting things was covering the Jimmy Connors Bjorn Borg exhibition tennis match here in the 80s. And seeing Borg, middle of the second set, actually it was 2 points from the end of the set, walk off the court, and people going, oh, hey, there's 2 points left to play, hey. And I always thought to myself, would he have done that at the U.S. Open or at Wimbledon or at, no. And there were rumors back then about possible drug use and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. It was just interesting to see him kind of just forget about those 2 points as if that's the game. And no, it's not. Sorry. You've got more to play before this ends, and you still have a third set to play. The other interesting thing was, and if you're a hockey fan, you'll love this. In Calgary, I covered old-timers games. I think they've come out to Vancouver once in a while, but covering old-timers games, I mean, for me, one of the great things was sitting in the dressing room with all these old-timers. You've got Henri Richard with his 11 Stanley Cups sitting across the room. Great guy to interview. And I'm sitting next to the big M in from Toronto, Frank Mihaljevic. And as you know, he had such pressure trying to get 50 goals in 50 games way back then and compete with the Rocket and Bernie Boom Boom Jeffrion and those people. And he's sitting on my left, and he's talking about his experiences with the Maple Leafs and how he hated his head coach, punched him black, just despised him. And then who walks in and sits right to my right in just moccasins, bare feet, no socks, is Guy Lafleur. and I turned to Guy and I'm interviewing him, because at that time I was doing for the Flames Inside Hockeys. I had to do 1 3-4 minute piece for every hockey game, exhibition, regular season, and playoff. Just interviewing these guys and being with them and sitting next to them. I mean, if you're a hockey nerd, how great can it be to have the Big M there and Guy Lafleur there, and you're interviewing both of them, and they're talking off the record, because of course, as you know, their careers are over.
Yeah.
Right? It's like politicians, right? Their careers are over. They can basically talk.
Or radio people.
Or radio, yes. Or radio people. Yes, like you and I. Yeah. They don't, you know, they hold nothing back because they don't care. It's 20 years later.
I hope you had pictures taken.
No, I didn't.
That's what happens to most of us. The big moments are never captured on film or video.
They're not. Yeah.
How about some of the people you work with? Who are some of the favorite people that you worked with during your career?
Oh, man.
You must be able to pick out a couple of names.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. There's so many people over the years. Well, I start basically with my mentor, J.J. Richards, because basically without him, my career would have gone nowhere. He changed my whole way of thinking as far as broadcasting went. I used to be, when I first came in, as we all did, right? Victoria Police today have arrested blah, 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 blah. We did personality. He taught me how to use my voice, how to do personality, how to put something into the voice, how to just write, how to do a whole pile of things. And I think, you know, we need that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody needs mentoring a little bit. So I start with him, and there were many great stories with him. Before I met him, I sent over a tape, because I was working in Vancouver at the time. He took it to the program director then, and the guy said, no, we don't want this guy, he's not very good. So Jay phoned me back, because I wanted to get back to Victoria. This was mid-70s, and I really wasn't enjoying Vancouver, not like I did. Some of the best years I've ever spent were here in Vancouver, from my days with CFUN, from 80 to 87. And he said, no, we don't really, that's not very good. So JJ phoned me back and he said, I want you to put more oomph in it, like jazz it up. And I didn't quite know what he meant. But anyway, I thought, okay, I'll go hog wild. And if I sound like an idiot, I sound like an idiot, but there it is. So I sent him a tape. He took it to the program director, and the program director said, that's the guy we want. And JJ said, well, that's the guy you just turned down. And so they hired
it's
me.
It's the approach, I think, knowing what they want and delivering that.
There's so many people over the years. Daryl B. Burlingham, who's dead now, but mm-hmm. used to be, I think, the greatest boss jock when it comes to music in radio, Canadian radio history. He was fabulous. He used to work with his little dog under the board. He used to have his little dog. He'd bring it in to see fun, and he'd sit the dog under the and that was his thing. There are lots of stories. I won't mention this guy's name unless I don't think he or his family would want this. But there was one guy one morning at CFUN who was a well-known disc jockey who walked in on a Sunday morning, higher than a kite. And every break, he'd go out the back, and we were up on West 4th Avenue, which is now the
Salvation Army thrift store.
And he'd walk out the back in the alley, and he'd be token up, and he'd come back in. And Norm Byatt and I were doing the news at that time. Norm was doing news, I was doing sports. The more high he got, the more he'd want to just sit and talk with us on the air. Forget about the music, forget about the news, forget about the sports. Nobody was listening. Paul Ski wasn't listening, the GM at the time. Neil Gallagher, the program director, wasn't listening. Or if they were, they couldn't tell the difference. But the whole format was going all over the place. And Norm and I were sitting there looking at each other going, when is he going to stop? Because we've got work to do. We can't just sit here for a half an hour and talk. This is not the format. You got to play music. And it went on and on and on. And we got through the shift. There's lots of stories. There's a ton of stories. Just from, if you listen, for example, to News 1130, because it is live. You know, I tell the people at Start, I say, and when they make mistakes, some of them are very hard on themselves. And I said, listen, we all make mistakes this on the air. This is the fun of it. This is live radio. You don't want to be taped because that's boring to do. Boring. But some of the mistakes you'll hear on the air and the mispronunciations of names, simply because of the wide variances of experience, age, and everything else. I don't know whether you ever did this, but there are at times instances where you really can't resist the fact to try and make somebody laugh on the air.
and the listener doesn't have a clue. As and really, you
on.
Shouldn't be doing
no.
it. It's not professional, no. but you can't help it. We can talk to people as they're on the air. We can talk to sports. We can talk to traffic as they're doing their stuff. And if we want to make them laugh or try, the avenue is right there because they can't help but hear us quietly. You know, you were talking about people, too. I mean, like you, we've both worked with so many great people. I mean, you can go down the names. I mean, Red Robinson I worked with in Vancouver doing the morning show, morning sports. It's a little intimidating. You work with these people, and they're a huge name. And Jack Webster, for example,
yeah.
major talk show host and name right across the country. I wanted to meet him at CJOR one morning. I was doing his show because I think Garner Causey, who did it regularly, was on holidays or he was away for a couple of days or sick or something. So I said, you know, could I meet Jack? And the broadcaster who did a lot of spots for us, commercial work, said, yeah, sure, I'll send him in after Jack's finished doing his work. So Jack comes in, and you'd think that he'd known me for 100 years. He walks up and he says, Tommy, how are you? And that's Scotch Brogue. And I said, Jack, nice to meet you. Pleasure. I'm doing your show. It's great. He said, are you enjoying it? And I said, yeah, that's okay. And he said, you're really enjoying it? And I said, yeah, it's great to be here in Vancouver. He walks out. Before he walked out, he turned to me and he said, they're all pigsties. And he walks out.
Some, as you say, so many people in the business are.
Yeah, it's when you, and as you know, it gives you such great experience because you're with these people who've been around the industry for like such a long time. They're major names. They just help you. I think they help you mature in a way.
Working at News 11:30, Dick Smythe used to call it the sausage factory because you keep grinding stuff out hour after
That's
hour
what it
after
is.
Hour. And he worked at 680 in Toronto for several years, and I also worked at 680 in Toronto. But that was before we had gone totally computer as well, where you had, an inch-thick script for each half hour.
Yep.
Plus, you had two computer systems, one for the commercials and one for the audio, so you're...
Which judging. Is now what we're doing. Just everything's off the computer.
Right. It's all in Burley, I believe.
Burley, and Scott is the commercials.
Yeah, that's basically I think, the Rogers format, and pretty much every major station across the country is using it.
Yeah.
But that certainly simplified the operation of putting it together.
It is, and not to knock it, it is... Because it's what CNN does television-wise, it's what Newsnet does, CTV Newsnet, it's what CBC News World does. It is repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
You churn out the same stuff.
Well, it's basically tune it in and get your headlines and get your traffic and get your sports and business, and then you're probably going to be gone for a couple of hours until you get back in the car again.
And something may have changed. It was. Well, as you know, it's the most costly format.
Well, because you have people.
Going. Yeah.
You have to pay people. You don't have to pay the computer. You know?
Yeah. And as you know, that's another downside of the industry today, and has been for, what, the last 10 years anyway.
The personality is gone.
Yeah, it's gone. And the people have gone. If they can get away with doing it, and good for them, it makes them money, but they don't need people. If the computer can do it, fine. Why do we need people?
Yeah.
Which is... You know.
But there's nothing to listen to. We have all the alternatives these days. We can listen to music on our computer, on our iPod, even on our cell phones.
Yeah.
You know, people don't really need music because they can get it anywhere, but the personality is gone. You talked about Daryl B. and people like that who could do one sentence between a song or over the intro of a song and give you all kinds of neat information in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And nowadays you have a machine that grinds it out and people reading liners on a voice track. It's just, there's no entertainment.
And unfortunately...
There's no news, there's no sports on most of these stations.
No, and unfortunately for the young people coming out of, say, BCIT or Ryerson in Toronto, where are they going? And I said to somebody recently, I said, I hope, you know, these guys and women that are teaching... all these kids coming out today, I hope they're telling them that basically, you know, there's not a lot out there. And somebody said, yes, at last they're finally doing that. Because your hopes and dreams are, yes, I'm going to get a job. And then you come out and you say, wow, there's not a lot out here. I went through 2 years. I spent X amount of money in school. I got all this training. Carol taught me this. Bob taught me this. They're good instructors. And now what? I can't get anything if they can get anything part-time.
Yeah.
Forget about full-time.
But it's taken all the, as I say, the guts out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's now, I call it the magic box that does everything sort of thing.
And you know what, not to knock the industry, but I don't know your feelings, but for me,
It's also, in a way, boring.
It is boring, and it's boring for the listener as well.
Yeah.
That's why they only stay for a little while, and then they go off to the next thing.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you. If Tom Bricker won $50 million tomorrow and decided he wanted to buy or start a radio station, what would he do? Or would you put the money in the bank and say, the hell with it?
My first thought is I'd retire. Thank you. Bye.
But if I did want to start one... Or take over one.
I asked a consultant recently about this, and they said, no, it probably wouldn't work today. And I'm wondering, with the reinvention of a lot of things over the years, bell bottoms were a phase at one point. When was that? 70s? Somewhere?
70s.
And they came back for a short time, and when was that? The 90s or
90s.
Something? And
they'll be back again.
Yeah. And other things come back. What if you started a radio station, and it was the old 1950s disc jockeys, personalities, promotion departments that would go out and hold sock hops in schools and do the old thing that they used to do, the whole personality gig? Would it work? A consultant, an American, told me, I don't think so. And no, today we're into this, and the other thing. Because so many things have been reinvented over the years, I'm wondering whether you could do it. And if I had that much money and I had some to just blow off, and I would have with $50 million, even if I lost and it didn't make money and I had to close the station down, I'd still like to take a shot at that and just see, with that old format, those old type principles, the personalities, news, sports, I'd like to see whether it would work.
Continuing in this vein, who would you hire to do this? I mean, there's a huge talent pool here in Vancouver that's sitting unused.
That I couldn't answer right now, because I'd have to sit down and think about that. But they'd be people that definitely could make it work. He wouldn't want to come back. He's retired. But I think Fred Latremo could make it work. And I'm not just talking disc jockeys. I'm talking
news sports.
I'm talking personalities.
There are a lot of them here.
I'd hire Brian Hall tomorrow if he'd want to do it. And I'd say, here's what I want. You take it to the nth degree until I pull you back and say, okay, now we're getting maybe into lawsuit territory, so just, you know, ease off a little bit. But I'd want personality. And I'd have to think about, through all the years, the people I've met. And if you're asking me, dead or alive, I'd have to pick some people that are no longer with us. But that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see something like that come back, because, like you and I have just been talking about, the personality in the industry. Well, here's a guy. Why not Red Robinson? His music history is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Red, go phone someone. Yeah, I'll get whatever on the air, and I'll do this. We'll do an interview.
He has tremendous archives of interviews and all the rest of it.
He could bring some of that back. And what I'm talking about, as you know, is bringing the industry, in ways, back to life.
I think it's pretty dead right now.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's sad to say, but it's, you know, for the last 10, 15 years, it has been, as you know, and you're an old broadcaster like me, it's been going slowly just... I think they've given up fighting. Yeah, I understand what computers are for. But, you know, as I tell the young people getting into the industry, and they look at me and I say, I know what you're going to think. You're going to think I'm some old guy who's, you know, going way back and reliving his dreams. But I'm going to tell you this. I think if you started when I started back in 1969, or when you started, Mike, I think you'd be having a heck of a lot more fun than you are today. Because, I mean, it's an industry where people think, oh, you're on the air.
It's entertainment.
It's entertainment. You must be having a ball. They don't see the hours you put in. They don't see the split shifts you put in. They don't see the wacko shifts you put in. And you can be working at all hours of the day.
And getting called at any time to come in when somebody is sick or drunk.
Well, that's true. And you know the divorce rate in the industry, like some other industry.
Well, who's going to put up with somebody who has hours like that?
Yeah, that's the problem. You want some stability. And radio and TV, in ways, just doesn't give you that at times. You know, you're at the... And if you want to keep the job, that's what you do. But I just think, and I long for some of them to go back then and experience it. And they kind of look at me and they say, because they really don't understand what the industry was like back then. They have a clue. I said, even with those big clunky tape machines and big reel-to-reel machines.
Turntable.
Yeah, there's no iPods back then. There's none of that sort of stuff. There's no, you know, pick up 600 channels on your TV by the flick of a switch with your, you know, your handheld set. That's, that doesn't exist either, but you'd be having more fun doing it.
So you work with a lot of young people who are right out of school.
Yep.
Over at News 1130, which is a good and a bad
Yep.
thing, because I'm sure you get some future stars who are
Yep.
there, and then of course some who are probably going to end up driving a truck or something, but what advice would you give to a student coming out of a broadcasting institution these days?
For the most part, let me start with this. I think most of them are bright because their world is so unlike yours and mine when we started. It was the wide, wide world out there. Today, the world has shrunk, and so they know more. I think they're brighter, they're smarter. They're quicker. Of course, this is the computer age, and they're into it, so they pick it up in 1 second. But still, you know, it's going to sound maybe a little old-fashioned, but if you can't start in Vancouver coming, say, out of BCIT, and you can get a full-time job in Vernon, yes, you're not going to get paid much. Yes, the hours can be terrible. Yes, you're in a smaller town. But in ways, thinking back to it, some of the best times I had were in Victoria. And that wasn't a major market back then. That was 250,000, 300,000 people. Yes, I had some great times in Vancouver and Calgary. But, you know, sometimes you can have a great time in a small market. And you probably will be doing more than you will be doing in a major market. So, therefore, you get a lot of experience.
You get a chance to do everything.
Yes. And, therefore, still today, I think that exists. And then you make the move to the major market. I mean, the money is not going to be, when you even things out, you're not going to get paid that much, say, in Vernon or Kelowna or Kamloops. When you come to Vancouver, as you and I know today, you're not going to get paid a heck of a lot here, unless you're a major morning star or something.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you know, the pay scale is relative to the size of population you're working with. So you come to Vancouver, if you're expecting to make $100,000 here doing news versus your $20,000 a year, whatever it is in Vernon, forget it. Not going to happen, as you know.
Not these days.
No. So you're basically looking at higher living costs, higher this, that, and the other thing, but the salary's more. Well, it should be in Vancouver because you're going to pay more.
Well, this is the second largest English market in the country. It
yeah.
should pay
yeah.
pay well. I mean, Toronto paid
yeah.
very good money
yeah.
at the top stations until 94, and then, of
yeah.
course, we don't have to do news anymore. We
no.
don't have to do public affairs.
No.
We can get rid of 12 people, you
yeah.
know, like just like that.
And that's the thing is, I the main message, I think, and I think you'd agree, is, and Tony Parsons made this point too, is, you know, don't snub a minor market. You can have a lot of fun there. You can learn a lot there.
Because there are people there who will take the time to
yes.
teach
yeah.
you.
Yeah, yeah.
And to become a
yeah.
communicator, which I think
yeah.
is the bottom line phrase in
yeah.
our business.
And right. I think that's important. It's very important. And today, I know at our station, they're trying to get the younger people to try and learn how to do that. And like you, I'm kind of saying, well, I guess you can do it in this market, but unfortunately, some just don't understand how. I was lucky, as I mentioned earlier, and I had a mentor who literally turned my career around and sat on me for 6 months. And why he was interested in doing that, or I guess he...
Well, he could see that you had potential.
I guess I had
That's
potential.
Exactly what happens.
And some of the young people that I work with today are getting lost, unfortunately, because there's not enough mentoring. And if there is so-called mentoring in the station at News 1130, and this is not knocking the station, a lot of people just don't have time.
No, it's just you're
they don't have
so
time.
Busy
They're
doing
so busy.
What you have to do.
Yeah. You may have the odd tip here and there. Well, that's great to a point. That's not actually mentoring somebody, sitting down with them for, say, half an hour a week.
Doing an air check, yeah.
And doing an air check, yeah. And they do some of those. They've started to get back to some of those and that sort of thing, and I think that's helping. But some of the people, unfortunately, are just a little lost. And, you know, I feel sad for them because I don't know where they're going. And some of them, you're right, will drop out. They'll just drop out of the industry and they'll say, well, this seemed to be great, but I'm going nowhere, so now what do I do?
Yeah, so the good instructors these days put a lot of options into the broadcast courses, such as look at the potential of the internet,
yeah.
look at the potential of public relations, look at almost every industry, business, government has a spokesperson. Somebody has to do those jobs. Those pay a lot better than radio. So
yeah.
you can teach people how to do public relations.
Yeah.
You can teach them how to do all these other things. And
see,
I think they're all part and parcel of what we do, because
yeah.
we deal with people all the time.
Yeah. See, that's what I've said to some of them, too. I said, if you're... Because you can see some of them getting a little... and even the talented ones getting, at times, a little... just a little confused about the industry and a little frustrated. And so I've said to them, okay, remember one thing. You're in the media. The media, as you've just mentioned, has a lot of open doors to a lot of other things. There are media people that are working for public health authorities here in the Lower Mainland who are tons of media experience. A guy I worked with and I've known for decades, Drew Snyder, works for TransLink. Mm-hmm. Drew's got a ton, but he knows how to PR and he knows, you know, what the media needs and what... I said, you can take it from that angle. If you want to work for a public relations firm, go do that. If you want to work customer service someplace, half of the boss's job of teaching you how to communicate with people is done. He's not taking somebody and saying, how do I help this person transmit what I want them... You'll learn it. You already know how to do that. So half of his job is already done. There's a ton of avenues you can do. Of course, for some of them, it gets back to the old question. I really don't want to leave broadcasting. But if there's not a market there for you, or at least there are avenues that the industry does provide you to go down.
You can adapt to that. You can freelance. You can do... I think almost everybody I've talked to in this series is doing something on the side related to the business.
Do a writing gig.
Yeah, mostly part-time, because that's all they want to do anymore. I mean, my vision of a dream radio station would be to hire people to do maybe a show a week, 1 4-hour show a week, and you pay them a decent buck for it. They do that. That's enough for them to keep their hand in and enjoy it.
Also, look at the future. Where is the business going?
I think we're at the bottom of a cycle. I think everything goes in a circle. Like the fashions and all the rest of it, and music. I think we're on the up curve. I think we've hit the bottom, and we're probably on the up curve. And I think I heard some interesting radio in the States when I was down there. Not, of course, owned by the big corporations.
No.
Small independent stations that still exist there. I think we have, what, 5 in Canada now?
Something like that.
But they still have some small independent... One was doing music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s with personality jocks. Another was doing, we play everything. And they do. You would go from one genre to another, but they made it work because they could tie it together with the personality.
That's what I used to do.
The personality they had on the air. So everything old is new again.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mentioned, you know, like when the consultant looked at me and said, oh, I don't know whether that would work. Why wouldn't something like an old 50s, you know, go to high school sock hops, personality disc jockeys, personality news, personality sports. I'm not saying controversial stuff. I'm just saying fun, up-tempo, let's have a blast.
Entertainment.
Exactly. You can still get your amount of traffic and weather and the important stuff people want to know now. You know, where's the latest traffic blockage? Well, we'll tell you. Don't worry about that. But in the meantime, we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. And I think it would make, you know, enjoyable broadcasting. I mean, growing up, I had my ear tuned to CKLG when it had its personalities and CFUN when it had its personalities. If I could have gotten it, I would have loved to have tuned into Windsor and the station there. Which...
Yeah, nowadays with the internet, it's so easy to listen to anything anywhere.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you had to get bootleg tapes or go and visit a place to hear the radio, but now it's so easy.
It was such fun. It was just such fun. Yeah, the Big 8 in Windsor, what a great station. I mean,
fabulous.
It was just...
Personalities in both news
and it was great to listen to. I mean, it was fun.
And compelling. You couldn't turn it off.
Exactly. That's the main thing.
That's what radio needs
to be.
Whereas
today, people look at blocks, as you know. They say, well, let's see, we have a listening audience that stays with us for 12 minutes, and then they tune out. How can we get them to 15 minutes? Well, maybe it shouldn't be that hard. You know, maybe with the old... And you're right. Maybe it's the bottom of a curve, and some of these old music stations and that are going to make a comeback, and radio's going to take off a little bit. And I think it'd be great if it did. It would open up a lot of jobs. Yes, you'd have to pay people. But isn't that what makes radio go around? People.
Oh, and they picked the cream of the crop. And they paid well. They had Jay Nelson doing morning.
Yeah.
Brian Williams doing sports.
Yeah.
Dick Smythe on the news on the top of the...
And,
hour.
You know, great stuff.
And we had so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Dick in Toronto, as you know, I mean, his commentaries used to run at CFUN when I was at CFUN in the 80s. And he always, to me, was the little guy who was stepped on by these big banks. They know they didn't.
And Mother Bell and all those other big institutions.
They put in another 2%
something that he'd have to pay in a bank charge. And so in a two-minute commentary, he'd go after the bank. Why must little guys like me have to pay this extra 2%?
And he was probably making more money than anybody there.
That's
except
right.
for Jane Elson.
That's right. That's right.
This has been fun. Thank you very much for your time today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.